Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 142 for comics originally released on April 28th, 2010. Starting us off in DC is Garrison No. 1 from Wildstorm. Now, this is one where I picked it up mainly because the first issue was coming out at a huge discount through DCBS of... Actually, was it a huge discount or just 50% off?
It might have been 50% off. I got it because Francesco Francavilla was doing the art on it. Personally, I would have got it even if it didn't have a big discount.
It was only 50% off. I got it because I was curious, but not because I was necessarily sold on the concept, because I don't think they did a good job with the solicits, because I did not order any of the other issues. But at this point, based on what I read, I think I will. I think the first scene started things off pretty well, but once they cut to the people kind of watching Garrison, there are a couple of things that just didn't quite work for me. You know, using the Homeland Intelligence Agency instead of the CIA, or the National Bureau of Surveillance instead of the FBI. It's like, why not just use the expected intelligence agency names? I mean, come on, guys. It took me out of the story a little. It's not a big deal.
It didn't take me out of the story at all, and the reason it didn't was, you know, they're setting this in some future where the U.S. is surveilling everybody really heavily, and I think they're just trying to make up new organizations for that, is to not imply that the CIA is sitting around surveilling everybody 24 hours a day. So it really didn't bother me.
It just seemed a little odd. I also thought the you know, Oracle-like, and I mean Oracle's in the character at DC, workstation there with the uber big screen monitor and stuff like that was just a little over the top. And for the most part, this story could play as a present day sort of a thing. In other words, I don't think it really relies on future technology or something like that. Yes, the surveillance is probably a bit more amped than we've got in reality.
A bit more? I hope it's a lot more. They've got everybody being surveilled all the time in this story.
Yeah, but frankly, I mean, you watch primetime TV and half the cop shows, they're able to get, you know, follow somebody across the country, it seems like, just by grabbing whatever traffic cameras, ATM cameras, and security cameras are, you know, in the area. So, I mean, to me, it didn't seem that further far-fetched than what we've got elsewhere. But, you know, with those things aside, and I didn't think they were major issues, they just seemed a little... You know, in the one case with the workstation with all the monitors, almost a little cliche. The rest of the stuff worked pretty well for me. I thought Garrison was a interesting character. I mean, there are a lot of unknowns in this issue, but there are also unknowns for the lead investigator of Bracewell. So it makes it easier to identify with her because we've also got the, well, what the hell, you know, aspects that she's got. And, you know, overall, it left me with questions in a good way. Garrison's an interesting enigma of a character. And with, you know, only one or two other exceptions than the ones I mentioned, like specifically Garrison just kind of, you know, walking away, quote-unquote escaping or whatever, which seemed a little too easy. Overall, this was a really intriguing story, and it set the scene, set the character, it set the mysteries, and kind of got things rolling. And I'm curious to see where it goes, so I will be getting the other issues.
This was an interesting first issue for me in that there's some aspect of telling a good story that I can't quite put my finger on, but this is the same kind of story where they ask more questions than they answered in the first issue and kind of were enigmatic enough that there have been other books that we've reviewed and that I've also read that we haven't reviewed where they do the same thing, where I come out of the first issue saying, I don't really care, you know, and I don't want to read the next issue. And the way that Jeff Marriott did it in this one, he did it in a good way in that I want to come back and see what happens. So there's not an absolute formula for me where if they don't lay everything out for me in a first issue, I'm not going to want to come back, but they have to do it in a good way that, again, I don't know exactly how to put my finger on it, but it worked for me in this comic.
Well, I think part of it is They started with a strong opening and a strong setup for Garrison. So he was set up as an interesting character. It's like, okay, there's legitimate reason to want to know more about this character. You know, why is he killing all these people? How is he getting, you know, around all this surveillance and stuff like that? And since, again, one of the characters in the story is trying to answer those same questions, it gives us a high confidence level that we'll get answers. Whereas in other books, they don't really set up the questions. It's just a question you're going to have because they don't address it. You know, the who is the Red Hulk kind of a stuff is an obvious question, but wasn't really set up in Hulk number one other than, I mean, nobody else. Well, I guess some of the people were asking, but you know what I mean? There's no reason to think we would have gotten an answer in, you know, within 2 years, which we haven't. Right. Whereas here, 6 issues, we know we're going to get it, or at least have high reason to expect we'll get it.
In the Hulk, they've got, you know, giant red guy who can, like, beat the crud out of things going for him because they have pretty much sustained themselves on that, you know, for a long time with their core fan base. You know, if you got, like, a regular guy, it's going to be a little harder to sustain the suspense for that long.
Yeah, yeah. But I think part of it, though, is the difference of a miniseries versus a never-ending story. You know, with a miniseries, you know, I mean, they're going to have to answer at least some of the questions, maybe not all the questions. And you know they've got a beginning, middle, and end, you know, kind of in their mind going in, whereas you're starting an ongoing, they could milk that mystery for decades.
True.
So I think that's part of it. And again, they do a good job introducing all the players here, setting the scene, and doing a couple of things which were, I don't say a little cliche, but very calculated as to, you know, setting up the type of character Garrison is. And I think a lot of it was at the end, you know, we would been led to believe he would do one thing, and he doesn't. And then there's the question of, well, okay, why not? So I think, again, they did a very good job in a first issue here setting up the scene and getting me hooked.
Right.
So for me, it was a strong 4 out of 5.
I gave it a 4 out of 5 also. I liked it. Be back for more.
Cool. So move on to our next book?
The Invincible Iron Man number 25. Kind of a relaunch for it. The first issue came out after the first Iron Man movie. Number 25 is out with the second Iron Man movie with another relaunch. I liked it in much the same way that I liked the first issue. I think that it told a good story. It was friendly enough to people who will come wandering in off the street, hope maybe, you know, however many will, having seen Iron Man 2. But it did have, you know, some nice moments with Thor and other Marvel continuity. But I kind of liked the new Iron Man suit stuff that they did. Good job, I thought, on the explanation for... I don't know if this isn't the first time that they've gone into it, but, you know, just the, you know, Tony's memory gaps over the last couple of years.
Well, the memory gaps are a new thing based on the restore of the hard drive.
Right, right. But, I mean, just the fact that he didn't back up. You know?
Yeah. I mean, last issue left Tony in an interesting place where he'd kind of, you know, wiped his mind and needed to go from a backup. It's a clever way to reset the character. Wasn't entirely sure I bought it, but frankly, they addressed my concerns or issues with that in this issue very well. So it's like, okay, you know, I'll go with it. There are a couple other things, though, about this issue. I mean, this whole Detroit Steel thing with essentially competing War Machine-ish sort of armor. Ugliest damn thing. I mean, Detroit Steel. Really? That's the name they're going to go with? So while I have issues with the name and the look of the stuff, I mean, seeing Hammer Industries kind of back in action is kind of cool, and I think a good move. And
another touch point to the movie. You know, because Justin Hammer's in the movie.
Yeah, I kind of figured that, but I haven't seen the movie yet, but yes.
Right. But, you know, so again, it's a little thing like that. I mean, Justin Hammer's well-established in the Marvel Universe, and then, you know, they're doing that, and they're making it friendly with characters who are going to be familiar to people who've seen the movie.
And that's just a smart move. Now, whether they really get people coming in or not, don't know. What I liked was this built off the previous Iron Man storyline while going in a new direction, and it was a new direction I liked. You know, the whole concept of having to rebuild the Stark corporate empire yet again was kind of cool, and it was a great use of Pepper. So I was really happy with that. It was nice to see Rhodey, you know, in a, you know, not cameo appearance, but, you know, in a subplot scene sort of a thing, setting him up where he fits into the whole thing. Great use of Thor. The one thing about this, and, you know, it was just as I was reading it, it just hit me, and it really got really distracting, because once I noticed it, I couldn't not notice it. Tony, the way he was drawn in this issue, and I'm not saying it's new with this issue, but I really noticed it here, it looks like he was almost light-boxed off of Sawyer from Lost. There are aspects of the way he looks in a lot of panels that just makes me think of that actor.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought of that, but now that I'm looking at this page where he's talking to Reed Richards,
mm-hmm.
he does look a lot like Sawyer.
Well, go back to the ones where he's talking to Pepper early on, and in some of the profile shots and stuff like that, I mean, it just looks so...
He does. You're right. I had not noticed it, but now that you pointed out, I kind of can't not notice it. Like, even the way he's, like, kind of sneering his mouth on the page with Reed Richards.
Exactly. That's so much that character's
yeah.
expression on Lost at times. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, necessarily.
Now you've ruined it for me. Now I'm going to see Sawyer every time I look at Tony Stark.
But that's what was happening to me, too, after a while. It's like, jeez. And I'm not even going to say that that actor would have been a bad choice to play Stark. I mean, obviously, Robert Downey Jr. does a great job. But Tony at least has a consistent, you know, look throughout the issue and stuff like that. The art's good. And frankly, either because he's either lightboxing it or at least using that, maybe that actor, or maybe even not, but as reference, it gives it a little bit more detail, subtlety, and reality to some of those expressions and stuff like that. That does kind of help it work. And, you know, I liked how he had to go to the Fantastic Four just to get some manufacturing capability in the short term. And it was a good issue. I mean, it resets the character in a couple of different ways in, you know, a clever manner. Again, building the corporate empire, you know, a new take on Iron Man. You know, Tony having to deal with mistakes he made but doesn't remember. And just the little failure of, oops, didn't make a most recent enough backup. And Reed kind of, you know, pestering him about that. And it made sense.
It's good that they've, I mean, it was a good way, you know, Fraction came up with to kind of get out of the Civil War hole. Because, I mean, here it's like, I did it. I can't tell you specifically why I did it because I don't have any memories from any time except before that happened. All I can tell you is I must have had a good reason at the time. And it's like, move on, you know, so you don't have to be rehashing that era forever.
Well, and
so
also,
it was actually kind of an elegant solution.
I think. I thought it was, too. It was a clever way to reset the character without totally resetting things. And the explanation for why he didn't have a more recent backup is that was like a last-ditch, you know, Hail Mary kind of a solution that he thought he would never need. It was just kind of a, well, you know, if things get that bad, I'll have something. But he's, I don't want to say optimistic enough to think it never would have gotten that bad, but you know what I mean? It made sense that that wasn't a high priority to make sure those backups were getting done or whatever. So I appreciated that that was addressed in this issue and not something they felt they had to take care of a couple of months from now or something.
Right.
To me, this was another very strong 4 out of 5. It was a good book. And if you like Iron Man, certainly if you've been watching the movies, check out the title.
And I actually gave this one a 5. I enjoyed this a lot. This is among the best that Iron Man's been in a couple of years. Big, strong issue for me.
Yeah.
I also like the fact that, you know, we got a nice big issue here. 38 pages of story plus the 4 pages of sketches at the back for $3.99. And in the days when Marvel is not too shy about slapping out a 22-page issue with $3.99 price tag, I appreciated the fact that I got more value for my dollar than a normal 22-page comic on this one.
Yeah, I definitely thought it was a good deal, and I also thought they put a lot of story in there, and having those extra pages really was beneficial to where they could address, okay, here's what's going on with Rhodey, you know, let's go set up Hammer Industries again, let's go do this, let's go see how Tony's interacting with the military-industrial complex that was where he usually got his money and stuff. It was good.
Ready to move on to our last pick, the last unicorn from IDW?
Yeah. Now, I've never read the story, so this is kind of my first introduction to the material.
Yeah, same for me. It's apparently, from reading the article and stuff in here, this classic fantasy story that was been out since 1968, so it's been out for 32 years. And I'm a fan of fantasy. I've read a lot of fantasy in my life, and I'd never actually heard of this story before. So I'm actually quite glad that IDW put this out, because it's introduced me to this. And reading the story, I can see why it's been around for that while. I really enjoyed it. I mean, there's setup, to be sure, in this issue. It's the first part of the story, but I liked the introduction to the unicorn character. The art by Rene DeLees, beautiful match for the story, I thought. The very, very fantasy-friendly art style,
yeah.
I thought. Especially that the one page that really got me was the one with the little the guys are riding on the horses, and he's telling the story about his grandmother mm-hmm. and the unicorn, and you see the little girl, and it goes up. And that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was. The art was, why I picked it up. I mean, this story, again, is 42 years old, which is older than I am, so certainly couldn't have read the book when it came out originally. But so, you know, I hadn't really heard of the author, not big into fantasy, you know, novels for the most part. There are a couple I've got on my bookshelf, but having seen stuff by this artist before and liking it, it's like, okay, I'll give this a shot. I enjoyed the story. You're right, that two-page where they really kind of set up the grandmother, the unicorn, and some stuff like that was really cool. The unicorn was well done, both in terms of the art and the coloring of it to make it kind of really stand out. And, you know, overall, I really enjoyed this. The one part I didn't care for, and maybe it was just because it was getting late and I was getting tired, was when the butterfly came in and, you know, it was switching fonts. It was, you know, essentially just doing, clips of songs and poetries and other things they've heard or whatever, kind of a catchphrase butterfly, for lack of anything out, or a soundbite butterfly. It was almost a bit more, I don't say non sequitur than I was up for at the time. But other than that, I really liked it. I wish they would have had a couple of more pages and gotten a little further into the story, not because they left at a bad point, but just because I wanted more of the story. You know, I really enjoyed this. It's very, very different than everything else I read, because, again, I don't really have any other fantasy titles on my list right now. And, you know, I'm going to keep going with this. I think it's, what, a quarterly one, maybe?
I think it's bi-monthly.
Okay.
So I think there are other issues of it solicited at this point.
I think there may only be one other issue, though. So it's not. I don't think it's monthly.
Right.
But, you know, hey.
Right. It's definitely not monthly. And I can see, you know, that it would. I don't know how fast Renee can draw, but, you know, it might take her longer than a month to do an issue of this. So.
And I'm okay. I'd rather it not get rushed and continue with the quality. I mean, this is good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the butterfly. Yeah, you have a point there. I mean, I'm just. It's an adaptation, so given that I haven't read the novel, I'm just assuming that that's the way that the butterfly was in the novel.
Oh, I'm figuring that
too. And it's kind
of
just a, you know, it's a...
It would have annoyed me in the novel.
It's an interesting take on butterflies kind of being flighty, you know?
So yeah.
I thought that was interesting. I thought that, at least as far as breaking up the adaptation, they actually left it at the end of the 22 pages at a good kind of cliffhanger kind of point. So they, you know, kind of segmented it in a good way.
Yeah, no, it ended at a logical spot, a good pausing point, and with something to kind of pull you into the next issue. So I thought that part worked. It was just one of those that, you know, if they'd gone to and done this in, you know, 48 page increments, I'd have been just as happy too. You know what I mean? I guess my point is I've got a little bit of a concern about it losing story momentum in the time between issues, whereas I think I would enjoy it more if I was reading more of it in one time. But, you know, time will tell on that.
Yeah. Ultimately, in time, it'll be a trade paperback, so that won't really be an issue.
Well, for the people who got it in trade paperback, I'm getting the monthly. Or the. You know,
I know.
So it will still be an issue for me is all I'm saying. For me, 4 out of 5. Again, good fantasy stuff, great art. Definitely worth checking out.
And for me, I will give it a 5. I loved it and can't wait for more. Now, I've got one more to go over. We've got a review book. It's called Power Out by Nathan Schreiber. It's a winner of the 2009 Zurich Award. It's they didn't count the pages. It's pretty thick. It's a graphic album. It's a graphic novel because, interestingly, it's quite thick, but it's actually a serialized story where this is like essentially the first issue, only I'm going to have to guess it's at least about 80 pages, if not more, of this story in the first issue. And then it's, coming soon, Power Out Book 2. So it's, let me see here. It's 84 pages. So, you know, quite a long chunk of storytelling. It's a story about a young boy, teenager, and he plays video games a lot, and he's left at home. His parents go on a cruise, and they leave him with his older sister, who's getting ready to go into college, so she's got to be 19 or so like that. And then while they're out, the sister goes off with her friends, and there's a huge power outage. And the sister's not home, and the boy's kind of left to his own devices, and you get some story. I don't want to spoil the story. It was well done, I thought. It's something that's not generally in my wheelhouse on things that I read. I think, though, that I can see definitely why it got the Zurich, why the writer-artist got the Zurich Award and, got funded to do this book. Again, very well done. And I think people who like books like Blankets or Essex County, things like that, they're going to eat this thing up. So if you're a fan of that kind of story, more of like the, I guess I'll just call it slice of life kind of story that focus on character and character development, that it's not, any kind of fantastical thing. It's not a action adventure story. It's not a, fantasy. It's not a horror story or anything like that. You get some scenes where you cut away that are, obviously the boy's, dream or his fantasy world or, whatever in his head, but they're not crazy or anything like that. They're, it just kind of intersperses between the real world aspects of it. You get some cutaway scenes to his, inside his head kind of things. But it was very well done. So like I said, this is something that anyone who reads the kind of real world kind of things are going to really like this, I would predict. So if you've been a fan of that kind of story before, you should really check this out. It's from Canal Press, and it's $9.95. And again, $9.95 for an 84-page story, that's not really that bad. That's actually less per page than, a normal 22-page comic book. And what I was really interested in by this one was the fact that it is, kind of this essentially giant comic book as opposed to, a complete story. Because, you go along and you're reading it, and I was expecting it to end, But then I get to the end, and it's like, coming soon, book two. Or it says continue reading on activate.com. So I haven't checked out that website, so maybe there'll be some more of it there. I give it a 4 out of 5. Good solid story, good character development, very real feeling characters. It's not normally the kind of story that I gravitate towards, but it was well done.
Cool. Yeah, I've gotten the review copy. I haven't had time to read it.
Other than that, I read all those Free Comic Book Day comics. Put up an episode about that. I've read all the Ultimate books, the Siege books. Still got last week or so of DC stuff waiting to be dove into. Although I did read the Green Lantern, or was it Green Lantern Corps?
Green Lantern Corps.
Green Lantern Corps with Hal and Guy that came out. I thought that was pretty good.
I read that, and I read the Superman Last Stand of New Krypton in Action Comics, and I think that's about the only stuff from this week other than what we reviewed that I've had time to read. So I've got, and I got like 4 dozen comics this week. It was a big shipment, so I got a ton of reading to do. Anything else? Does it pretty much do it?
I think that does it.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss War of the Supermen number 1 from DC, The Astonishing Spider-Man and Wolverine number 1 from Marvel, and Pilot Season Stealth from Image Comics.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.